Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by... Looking for a way to build daily prayer discipline? Seen the rise in mindfulness meditation, but not sure if it is possible to meditate in a way that's consistent with your Catholic faith? Just looking for a way to breathe new life into your existing prayer routine? No matter what you're looking for, Hollow is here to help. Hollow is a Catholic prayer and meditation app that helps users deepen their relationship with God through audio-guided contemplative prayer sessions. From meditations on the daily gospel, to the rosary, to daily examines, Hollow has something for everyone. Hollow is the number one Catholic app in the U.S. It is free to download and has permanently free content, but you can also check out all of the premium sessions for 30 days, risk-free, by signing up at www.hollow.app/breadbox.
Welcome to the Bear Wozniak Adventure. Kickstart that engine and roll thunder with the pack. Explore the grittiness of manly spirituality. Gain traction in the virtues. Zoop up your spiritual engine by turning adversity into adventure. Now here's Bear Wozniak. Let's ride.
Aloha and welcome to the Bear Wozniak Adventure. I'm your adventure guide, Bear Wozniak. Yesterday, my wife Cindy and I paddled out. We're here in Cocoa Beach, Florida at the time. We spend half our time here, half in Hawaii. And we went out to go stand-up paddling. And it was going to be a really cool experience because we paddled out and we're looking to the north and there's going to be a rocket launch. We're in Cocoa Beach and there's going to be a rocket launch. There's going to be a rocket launching about 10 miles north of us, and we were going to watch it and see it go in a beautiful crystal blue sky. And many people down on the beach, everybody facing the same direction. It's almost like waiting for the return of Jesus Christ, you know. And you watch everybody, and I'm looking at my watch. Well, the rocket should have launched by now, you know, from what we had seen. They go through this process. It was running on its own power. All the fuel was up and running. And it should have launched. And we were paddling really hard into the wind, making sure we were going upwind so we'd see it when it launched. And it never launched. And it's really sad. I mean, everybody kind of walks his way. Vice President Mike Pence had been here the day before. The same thing happened. It was an aborted launch. And you think about a rocket, you know, it's meant to fly into outer space. It's still a rocket, whether it launches into outer space or not, but it's kind of lost its purpose. And it's so much like human beings. You know, if you're a human being and you have all this spiritual, rational soul that God's given you, and you have your physical body and all this potential, but you never have a relationship with Jesus, it's like a rocket that has never launched. You're human, but are you fully human if you haven't opened yourself up to opened up that capacity that you have been given to say, Lord, I give you my life, not my will, as Jesus said, but thy will be done. And you haven't abandoned yourself to God's will. You've missed out on a great, great, great adventure. And so our TV show, our ministry, our radio show, everything that we do, our creed is that the wildest thing you can do in life is abandon yourself to the adventure of God's will. And I was thinking of Aslan, the lion. He said, I'm a good lion, but that doesn't mean I'm a tame lion. So throwing yourself into the arms of God and the will of God is the most exciting adventure you can have. And I got goosebumps right now because our guest means so much to me. His books over the years that I've read and just getting to know him. We have as my co-adventure guide today a man who's on a genuine adventure, Mike Aquilina. Aloha, Mike.
Hey, Bear. How you doing?
I'm doing great. I mean, when people watch the show. I guess maybe a couple million people listen to this on radio, but people watch the show on our YouTube app.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and if they could see you right now, if they were to go to our YouTube channel, Bear Wozniak, a moment ago your camera turned a little bit, and I realized that this little the books that you are surrounded by in this nook that you're in, if you look down, there's row after row after row of books. It looks like where Indiana Jones would have put the Ark of the Covenant. So it goes on forever.
It does. It does.
So, Mike, you are one of two or three of my most returning guest. I just love having you on the show.
And I love the show. This is fun.
We get to have a little bit of fun together. You have that set of books behind you, the ancient, what is it called again?
Oh, the Ancient Christian Commentary on Scripture.
Yep. Right. And I was interviewing Pete Sox the other day. He turned them on to the same one. And, you know, I got a set of those books this summer. It was my early Christmas present from my wife. So I just love them.
Isn't it wonderful? Any verse of Scripture, you just look up that verse and you can see what the earliest Christian teachers said about that particular verse. So you're there in the midst of our fathers in the faith, and you're getting their insights on the Scriptures that are most puzzling to you or most important to you.
That's so cool. And then, like, but here's the rabbit hole. So you're reading, I'm reading the commentary on the book of Acts, right?
Yeah.
A lot of Athanasius in there.
Yeah.
So now I have the writings of the early church fathers. So now I've pulled out the Athanasius book, and now I'm going through all of that stuff. So it's like an infinitely deep, you know, it's like, I think a gold miner, you know, chipping away in a cave, sees a vein of gold and he follows it. And then, well, where does this go? Or what does this go? Where does this go? And you can never get enough. So
It's a wonderful life.
It's a wonderful life. You may not be listening to this during the Christmas holidays if you're watching this on YouTube or on one of our podcasts, but it is a wonderful life. It's a Christmas season right now.
Yes, it is.
I've got in front of me the new book that just came out. When I saw it was coming out, I went into Amazon and reserved it, so it came to me as soon as it could possibly could. Villains of the Early Church. What inspired you to write that?
What inspired me? Well, I'll tell you what did. One thing I've noticed over many years of reading the early church fathers is that many of them were trained in the art of rhetoric. You know,
right?
They could really speak, and they could really write, and they knew how to inject a lot of drama into their sentences.
It's true,
and
huh?
Very few things animated them as much as their enemies. Okay, that these people who had set themselves against the church fathers, or set themselves against the church, or set themselves against Jesus Christ, they were the ones who could really get the master rhetoricians riled up. And when a master rhetorician gets riled up, he hurls his best insult out there. So I noticed that I was, you know, underlining and highlighting all of these great insults. And I, at some point, I thought, wouldn't it be great to pull together all of the church fathers' best insults and best tirades and
right.
most entertaining passages? And I knew that the best way to do that would be by writing about the villains of the early church.
Yeah. And, you know, they did us a favor. In a way, because they, the villains helped us. We're challenged us to really understand our faith. I forget the quote from Augustine, but they really challenged us, and they made us think deeper, go deeper,
yeah.
and get a fuller grasp of what the doctrine of the church should be.
That's right. They shake us out of our complacency. If the villains are within the church and they're heretics, then we have to deepen our understanding of the mysteries. We have to go deeper in contemplation. We have to go deeper in prayer and study and all of these other good things
right.
that we'd probably rather not do. You know, we'd yeah. rather putter around in the backyard or poke around in the engine of the car or, you know, do something on a hobby, go golfing, you know? And when these people challenge us, then we have to put all that aside and we have to go deeper. So heretics make us do that, but, you know, persecutors do too. The people who attack us from outside and come after us with both guns blazing, you know, we have to build up our defense at that point and maybe even a counteroffensive. And in order to do that, again, we have to go deeper in prayer, deeper in contemplation, deeper in study.
You know, so what I'm thinking right now is that thank God there wasn't golfing or bowling, or Athanasius might have been focused more on that than.
Hey, you know what? There are always distractions. You can put me in a cell with nothing in it, and I'll find a way to be distracted.
Yeah, no, I was looking at one of my. You know, I love to read old books, and I was looking at one of the old books, and there was a drawing in rock of a baseball bat and a ball, you know, from way back then. It was a more like a cricket bat. But, I mean, from way, way, way back, you're right. There are always distractions. And, you know, I'm looking at your this beautiful library that you have, and it just like you're an author. Writers are readers, and you've just been able to soak up so much from all of these different books. And it must just be I want to be like Mike.
Well, for me, this is living the dream, getting paid to read and write. It's not what I've been able to do all my life, but it's definitely what I was working toward when I was in my 20s and 30s.
Okay, that's what I was thinking about this the other day while I was reading your new book. When did Mike realize this was the path he was going to get to live? You know,
I think it was very gradual. And when I was in college, I didn't declare a major until they made me declare a major. They said, declare a major or leave Penn State University, you know. And I was doing a lot of things. I was working a couple of jobs on campus. I worked as a janitor in order to get myself through. I worked for the football program as an academic tutor. And did a lot of those things, and finally I had to declare a major, and I ended up getting an internship in the publishing industry, so I figured I'd declare English. But that was kind of a fluke. I just kind of stumbled into it. One of my professors offered me the internship without my going for it. So my first job in publishing, and it worked out. You know, my next job came out of my first job, and so on down the road. Just God kept kicking the can down the road.
Yeah.
And kicking my can down the road. So I worked in the tech field for about 8 years. And then I worked for a newspaper, and after that I went freelance. I had made enough contacts in publishing that I could go freelance. And that's what I've wanted to do. That's what I decided I wanted to do, and that's what I enjoy doing.
We're talking with Mike Aquilina. He's the author of the new book that just came out within the last week, Villains of the Early Church. We got to take a break, Mike. We'll be right back with more of the Bear Wozniak Adventure.
Hey, man, I don't want you to miss out on your free stuff at deepadventure.com. Go there and subscribe to our weekly email newsletter. You get free video content, including the Bear Wozniak radio show, video version on YouTube before it even airs on EWTN. And you can follow us on all of our social media. Go to deepadventure.com and subscribe. Plus, good stuff happens when you support us at patreon.com/Bear Wozniak Deep Adventure. You get instant access to every radio show, Bear Wozniak Adventure, and our TV episodes, Long Ride Home, the instant we produce them, months before they even air. Plus, we give you all kinds of free stuff, coffee cups, t-shirts, and other things like that. Go to patreon.com/Bear Wozniak Deep Adventure and become our patron. If you're watching on YouTube, don't forget to press the subscribe button and ring that bell.
This is the continuing exploits of the financial liberator, Tom Greit, CEO of Notre Dame Federal Credit Union. Tom, when is a good time for people, and when is it not a good time for people to use credit?
You use credit when you have an opportunity to buy an asset that will go up in value. Examples of that would be a home, an investment property, other types of investments. What you don't want to do is use a loan to buy an asset that's going down in value. The best example of that would be your car, or taking a loan out to go on a trip, or buying stereo equipment. What you want to do is that when the loan is paid off, the asset has gone up in value, not gone down. And that's what happens when you buy an appreciating asset. That's what doesn't happen when you buy a depreciating asset.
So use the virtue of prudence when you're making your financial decisions, and you can live a life of financial liberty. We've been talking with Tom Greit, the financial liberator and CEO of Notre Dame Federal Credit Union. That's NotreDameFCU.com.
This is a warning. The Bear Wozniak Adventure is dangerous. The radical change Bear challenges you to is not for wimps. Change this station now to a soft rock station before it's too late. You've been warned. Now, here is Bear Wozniak.
Aloha and welcome back to the Bear Wozniak Adventure. We get to do this radio show because we have two really great sponsors, Solidarity Healthcare, that some of my family members are on, and also Notre Dame Federal Credit Union, the largest Catholic credit union in the world. And we want to recommend both of them to you. You can go to our website, deepadventure.com, and you can click on the link there. I can assure you personally that their service is second to none, and that they're great people. So we thank them so much for allowing us to come to you. Today we have as our co-adventure guide, Mike Aquilina. Mike, when we're talking about his newest book, Villains of the Early Church, but we were talking a little bit about this genesis, this progression towards you becoming an author. So when you were with the newspapers, were you writing at that time?
Yeah, well, the job I took at the newspaper was an editorial job. I was editor of the newspaper, actually. So I was doing a lot of writing because we were a small staff, and I found myself writing features and, of course, writing the editorial every week, and occasional columns, opinion columns. So I did all kinds of writing then. I did it for 3 years, and then I went freelance.
Yeah, so writing those short articles, it takes a real skill. It'd be easier to write a long article than a short one in some ways, right? Because you have to pack so much in. So
it's sure.
You really developed a skill.
Yeah, and you have to learn to write on the fly. By then, I knew how to do that because of my work in the tech field. We put out all kinds of publications, and we were always on a short deadline.
Were you writing like the technical manuals or something, or technical writing?
Well, no, not technical writing so much as their promotional writing, which is a different kind of thing, because you have to make these big technical ideas accessible to the people who are actually buying the devices.
It was a great...
And these are obscure devices, you know, protocol converters and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
This was back in the day.
It's almost like you have to first let people know they have a need and then explain why yours is the best one to fulfill that need. They didn't even know they had.
Right, and these are non-technical people, so you have to write it in ordinary language. It was a challenge.
But I think it really prepared you. Those two positions really prepared you. What was your first book?
My first book, I edited a collection of the writings of Father John Hugo, who was Dorothy Day's spiritual director. Dorothy Day is an American woman who's up for canonization now. Her spiritual director was Father John Hugo, who was a priest of my diocese, the Diocese of Pittsburgh. And together with David Scott, I edited that book, a collection of his writings. It's called Weapons of the Spirit.
And what about the first book that was basically your own baby?
Well, that was my own baby. It was The Fathers of the Church.
That book's huge.
Yeah, it's still, and now it's in its third edition. It's still in print, and it's a standard textbook for seminaries and universities, and a popular book too. I didn't write it to be a college textbook. I wrote it so that my junior high son could read it. And it's ended up serving a lot of purposes besides the edification and entertainment of my junior high son.
Well, I really think, I mean, that's really true about your writing. I mean, that it's so engaging, and you explain things so that people like I can understand them.
Oh, thank you.
You know, but I was thinking about that. This is written This is written so that anyone who reads a newspaper could understand this.
And, well, I tried to make it funny.
And you also draw people in, like you have to do in the headlines of a newspaper. So I kind of get that. But yeah. I've always been curious because I love writing. I want to be like Mike. I want to do that. But I guess, you know, I write the TV show, and I've written a couple of books. But I would love to just hide in a corner someplace and just write. I love the process of writing. I just love it. But we're talking with Mike Aquilina about his newest book, Villains of the Early Church. And among all these villains, which one is your favorite?
Well, I guess I have favorite chapters in the book.
Yeah, okay.
And my favorite chapters are the funniest ones. And those would be the chapters on Nero and Nestorius. And in both cases, I think it's because the guys were big buffoons, you know, and also because a lot of people in their own time recognized that and left us abundant records of their buffoonery. So I'm able to pack an awful lot into those chapters about the things these people did that that were offensive or just plain stupid or really provoked strong responses from the early church fathers.
I want to hear Nero. How do you pronounce his name? I say Nero.
We say Nero, I think. Nero. The way I say it.
Well, Nero, right?
Right. Right.
He really was like the emperor who, you know, the old saying, the emperor's not wearing any clothes. He thinks he has invisible clothes on that are invisible.
But right.
He really didn't understand what everybody else thought about him. And give us his story.
Well, I don't know that he didn't understand it or that he didn't. Maybe it was that he didn't care.
Well, when he was winning races, he lost and things. Like,
oh,
give
man.
Us the story. This was a young emperor. He was a young man. Can you give us the highlight of his life?
He was a young man, and he tended to move forward by killing people who might be in his way. I think he had the example of his mother before him, because his mother had a habit of doing the same thing. Unfortunately, she ended up being one of his victims. Nero killed his mother, killed his wife, killed his unborn child. He just killed what was in his way. That's not the funny part, but he was a narcissist. You know, he fancied himself an artist, a poet, a singer, an actor, you know, and he liked to be center stage. He liked to have a lot of people looking at him, laughing at his jokes, weeping at his poetry and that sort of thing. And let's face it, he's the emperor. He can kill you, and he has a track record of killing people. So when he's reciting his poems, you'd better be crying in the front row. If he's telling a joke, you'd better be laughing. If he submits his poetry in a contest, he'd better get the prize, or the judges are in danger.
Well, you were saying he got prizes from places he didn't even submit his poetry.
That's right. That's right. They just give it to Nero. And then he wanted to fancy himself an athlete. So he would get in a chariot and race against the professionals in the chariot races. Hey, now, are you going to be the one who beats him in the race? No, because you're going to die if you do. So Nero just won everything because everyone knew he was a narcissist, and everyone knew he was a murderer.
He was amazing. He was an amazing athlete, an amazing poet. I don't know where you get off on talking about the emperor like that.
You know, and now, 2,000 years later, it's funny to see this. I mean, it's the stuff of comedy. At the time, it wasn't so funny to live in the midst of it, but, you know, we can laugh now. It wasn't funny to be a Christian in the time of Nero, because he was the one who instituted the Roman persecution that lasted about 275 years. You know, this went on for centuries, but he's the one who provided a legal precedent for it, because he blamed the Christians for the fire that consumed a good portion of Rome. He set the fire, most likely.
That's what I think. I mean, that's what I want to think. It seems like it's in line with who he is.
And what did he do with that area of the city that burned? He built himself a palace there. Sounds kind of suspicious to me, you know?
But this is in the time when you have Paul and Peter kind of caught up in the whole thing. So this is around 67 AD. I'm trying to remember the somewhere.
Yeah, 64 AD is when they died. It's the lifetime of the apostles. The apostles are working in that city, and there's already a well-established Christian community. It's viewed with suspicion. Why? Well, because they're observing a moral code that is definitely at variance with the general population, especially in terms of sexual morality. So their neighbors feel judged, okay? And they kind of resent the happiness that the Christians exude. Yeah. So there's a lot of sentiment that runs against the Christians at that time. So you can see how Nero would find an easy scapegoat in the Christians. A lot of them were foreigners. They had Jewish associations, and the Romans really didn't like the Jews. So they were looked upon as foreign and contrarian, and these are people who would be easy to blame for a big fire.
We're talking with Mike Aquilina in his new book, The Villains of the Early Church, which is, I think, a great read for us at this time, because we have to realize when you read these, you see that the Holy Spirit, in spite of all of the persecution and heresies and things that came forth, the Holy Spirit was faithful and purified and brought the church through more beautiful and stronger than ever. This is Bear Woznick. We want to invite you to go to our website, deepadventure.com, especially the men, if you're listening. You can go there and you can join Bear's Man Cave just by clicking a button, and you get invited then to become a part of our secret Facebook group, which you can't go to the Facebook group to join. You have to go to our website. And then we get together about every couple weeks, and we have a Man Cave meetup using Zoom video chat, and all the men post things that challenge each other, encourage each other, help mobilize each other. So we'd love for you to go visit our website and also subscribe to our email. This is Bear. We'll be right back with the Bear Woznick Adventure.
Hey, man, I don't want you to miss out on your free stuff at deepadventure.com. Go there and subscribe to our weekly email newsletter. You get free video content, including the Bear Woznick radio show, video version on YouTube before it even airs on EWTN. And you can follow us on all of our social media. Go to deepadventure.com and subscribe. Get your free stuff. And if you're watching on YouTube, don't forget to press the subscribe button and ring that little bell. Don't miss out.
Aloha and welcome back to the Bear Woznick Adventure. We're talking with my co-adventure guide, Mike Aquilina. He's surrounded by books. I asked you earlier what would happen if you just pushed one of those shelves. Would it be a domino effect or some? How many shelves are there?
I don't know. They're IKEA shelves, so they're all interlocked and interconnected. It would be hard for them to fall over.
Yeah,
I guess that keeps me safe.
Yeah, but you know, Mike, if they're IKEA, that means you assembled them.
Yeah, that's true.
That might be the
fatal flaw.
That's the flaw in your logic there. Good intentions, though. But it is like that, I think, with the heresies too. You know, once you find the truth, and it becomes like a world a domino effect of syllogism. If this is true, that must be true. If this is true, that must be true. But once you break the code on a false heresy, on a heresy, then it can open up so much insight.
Yes.
Let's talk about my favorite heresy. not Gnosticism, but Arianism.
Arianism, yeah.
Let's talk about that, and Nestorianism too. I guess that would follow up with that, be part of that discussion. Let's talk about that area in your book, Villains of the Early Church. Let's talk about Arius.
Well, Arius was a priest of the city of Alexandria in Egypt, and he had trained in the city of Antioch, which was a rival city and a rival church in a sense. They had a different way of doing things, different way of approaching the scriptures and that sort of thing. But Arius, even for Antioch, was kind of an extremist, and he took an extreme view in his reading of scripture. He did not recognize Jesus as co-equal and co-eternal with the Father. Now, if you accept that, then you're denying the Trinity. You're denying that God is an eternal Father. And he did, outright. He denied God's eternal fatherhood. So he said that there was a time when the Word did not exist, the divine Word. There was when he was not. And he set these ideas to music, so that they could spread more easily throughout the land.
They were like hymns, right?
Yes, right. So he was listening to his bishop Alexander preach one day, and Alexander was preaching on the Trinity, and Arius stood up and denounced his bishop. Okay, well the bishop didn't take too kindly to that, and he denounced Arius in return. But a bishop's denunciation has some teeth to it, okay? And so he suspended Arius in his ministry. He condemned his teaching and that sort of thing. But Arius continued to make connections. He was a master of what we would today call networking. You know, he got to know influential people. He got them on his side, and he put up a pretty good counterattack to his bishop. And the Arian doctrine began to spread out there from Alexandria. And once he was exiled, then it just spread further. So people started to take up this heresy. And the way St. Jerome describes it, he said, the world suddenly awoke to find itself Arian. It's like you wake up one day and all of your neighbors have accepted this heresy. This heresy that denies that Jesus Christ is the eternal Son of God. Now, that's a dangerous thing because that changes everything. That changes the meaning of the gospel. That changes the meaning of salvation. It changes everything in Christianity. So he had great success. And again, he was able to win over some influential people. And it created a crisis in the church, such a threat to unity in the church that the emperor had to call a council in order to solve this problem. And he called the Council of Nicaea, the first great ecumenical council of the church.
It was going to bring civil war in his empire. I mean, right. He was concerned
the unity of his people. So he thought that there was going to be war. There had been riots over this. So they called a council, and the bishops overwhelmingly, ruled against Arius and in favor of the doctrine of Alexander. Now, Alexander died shortly after the council, and he was succeeded by his secretary, a man named Athanasius. And I know Athanasius is a great favorite of yours, Bear. Yeah. But Athanasius was a great saint and just a tough guy. You know, he was exiled many times from his see. You know, he spent decades away from his city, living in hiding, because he had a death sentence looming over him.
He was pushed out into the desert, and then I think he was forced over to Gaul too, right?
Yeah, sure. And so here's this Egyptian who has to live in the cold countries, you know, and suffer our winters.
But Arianism to me was the first political correctness. It was so much easier for people to accept a Jesus who wasn't a God, you know, who wasn't, you know, the eternally begotten Son of God. And most of the military became Arian at some point. Was that during this period of time?
Well, the Arian crisis was not solved by the Council of Nicaea because a lot of people just didn't go along with it. They found workarounds and loopholes and that sort of thing. And then, the successor of Constantine, his son, Constantius, was an Arian. So you had the imperial power behind it, and you had people naming Arian bishops. And so the crisis continued. And it was a dangerous thing for Athanasius repeatedly. So he had to fight. You know.
Now can I ask you a question before we go that? Can I please believe the story that Saint Nicholas punched out Arius?
You can believe it if you like. Unfortunately, there's not a lot of contemporary historical evidence in favor of that. And St. Nicholas is even absent from the lists of some of the lists of the people who attended the Council of Nicaea. So there's not a lot behind it, but you can believe what you want to believe.
I'm going to say, Mike,
you can believe he's Santa Claus if you want.
I want to believe that Santa Claus, that was the first bad Santa, as they say. But this was a very insidious thing. In fact, I think Constantine, back in those days, the emperors would wait till the end often to be baptized, because they being an emperor was a kind of a bloody deal sometimes. And I think, wasn't he baptized by an Arian bishop?
Yeah, problematic bishop, that's for sure. He was baptized, at the end of his life, because Constantine himself was a problematic figure. He was, as you point out, a violent man. We talked about Nero having all of these family members killed. Well, Constantine had his son killed and his wife, his first wife. So there was a lot of that in his background as well.
And then Constantius, I don't know how to pronounce his name quite right.
Constantius.
Constantius. Yeah. Was he the emperor during the time of Augustine?
No. He didn't live that late. And by the time Augustine came around, we're talking about that's after the Emperor Theodosius, who firmly established orthodoxy and really enacted laws against any other variant forms of Christianity. So Theodosius kind of ruled out a lot of the heretics that had plagued the church up to that point.
And when did Julian the Apostate come about then? Before?
Well, he was a little interlude there in the Christian era. Julian was a Christian who renounced his Christianity and tried to repaganize the empire. He died in 363. So and he ruled just a couple of years. So it was a very brief rule, but it was a rule that was a genuine threat against Christianity.
But didn't he go to school with Gregory of Nyssa
Basil the Great and Gregory of Nazianzus, right.
Nazianzus and Basil the Great. So they went to school together, you know, seminary basically, or theology school, I don't know what you call it. And then here's their good buddy becomes the emperor, and now he's wants to return Rome to paganism.
Sure, and he was another guy who made life difficult for Athanasius.
Yeah.
So you find poor Athanasius facing up all these challenges, but with God's grace, he proved himself equal to these challenges, these impossible enemies that he faced.
Yeah, you know, it was so the whole world became the whole church became Arian, and yet the Holy Spirit prevailed. And
that's right.
That's great hope for us in our time.
And we came through stronger and clearer in our doctrine. So it toughens us. It sharpens us.
What about Nestorianism then?
Nestorianism came about in the next generation. And Nestorius was kind of a funny guy.
But you know what, Mike? I get so involved I forget I have to take a break. But we'll come
so
back. But I mean, Nestorianism he's like the sequel.
The
Arianism, Nestorianism both revealed real truth. This is Bear Wozniak. You can go to our website, deepadventure.com, find out more about our ministry, and you can buy Mike Aquilina's new book, Villains of the Early Church. We'll be right back with more of Mike Aquilina.
Good stuff happens when you support us at patreon.com/ Bear Wozniak Deep Adventure. You get instant access to every radio show, Bear Wozniak Adventure, and our TV episodes, Long Ride Home, the instant we produce them, months before they even air. Plus, we give you all kinds of free stuff, coffee cups, T-shirts, and other things like that. Go to patreon.com/ Bear Wozniak Deep Adventure and become our patron. If you're watching on YouTube, don't forget to press the subscribe button and ring that bell.
Men, yes, we mean you. Go to deepadventure.com and check out Bear's Man Cave, a men's only Facebook group. Join the pack with other men as they challenge and inspire one another to manly virtue. Plus, you can dialogue with us in our regular video chat meetups. Plus, get your exclusive content. Join at deepadventure.com. That's deepadventure.com.
Aloha, welcome back to the Bear Wozniak Adventure. When Mike and I, Mike Aquilina, who's my guest today, when we talk, I just get all wrapped up in it. I forget I have a radio show. and with radio shows means you have to take a break, but we're back from that break. It's kind of like a horse when it gets close to the barn, it smells that alfalfa. When I'm with you, I just start sprinting and I forget that I have a job to do here. But we were talking about Arianism and Nestorianism and how it was kind of like a 1-2 punch, and how us having to deal with that, the church having to deal with that, really revealed some beautiful truth. So the truth of Arianism, what was the strongest truth that came from that? And then let's go into Nestorianism.
Oh, yes. Well, you know, Nestorianism was a kind of a funny thing, because Nestorius was kind of a funny guy. You remember Felix Unger on The Odd Couple?
Yes, yeah, that was him.
That was him. You know, he was kind of fussy, you know, and he liked things to be just so. And he was one of these guys who's always correcting you. He'd say, well, technically, that's not true. You know, no matter what you say, you know these people, you know, you meet them in a bar, you know, you want to step outside pretty soon. But always correcting you, technically, that's not true.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And so for whatever reason, the one thing that was his pet peeve, the one thing that set him off, was the phrase "Mother of God." Mother of God. Now, you have to understand that the church had been using this phrase for hundreds of years. Mm-hmm. Hundreds of years. And we're only talking about the year 430 here, right? And there's a rich tradition of hymns that use the phrase Mother of God. The Emperor Constantine had used the phrase Mother of God. And even the enemies of Christianity mocked us for always singing to the Mother of God, because Christians love the Blessed Virgin Mary. This has always been the case. Mm-hmm. So Nestorius, this fussy monk, gets named to the most powerful position in the East, which is, you know, the Bishop of Constantinople, right? So he's there in the emperor's city, and he starts to tell the people, well, I don't want you to use those hymns that use those phrases. I don't want you to use those prayers that use the phrase Mother of God, because technically you can't call her Mother of God. Why? Here's his logic. A mother has to precede her son in time, and nobody precedes God, right? Mm-hmm. You know? Now, they just kind of turned it on him, and they said, your logic is bad, because if you say that she's not the Mother of God, then you're saying that her son is not God.
And this is it. This is the crux of it right here, right?
Right.
Okay.
Right. And so it became this big conflict. The monks didn't like him. The common people didn't like him. And he managed to tick off the emperor's sister, who was a consecrated virgin in the church. So you have this conflict that's going on, and he just digs in. He just digs in. And so the people started to make up songs, like drinking songs that made fun of the way he talked. And the drinking songs would have all of his fussy phrases in it, like, technically, you know.
Is that right?
They just mocked him. They just mocked him. And eventually the emperor, again, it's one of these crises that's becoming threatening to the order of the empire. There are going to be riots if you don't do something about these guys, about this guy, because his own people are saying that this is an affront to the Blessed Virgin Mary, whom they love. So the emperor calls a council in Ephesus.
And what emperor is it?
Oh, my. Now
never mind. Never mind. Go ahead.
I'm embarrassed. Anyway, the emperor calls the council in Ephesus.
Which is a key place, because its tradition says Mary may have lived there at some point.
That's right. At the end of her life with St. John. So you have that going on, and what's interesting is that the people were so wrapped up in this conflict that they went to Ephesus and they waited outside the council chambers in the blistering heat of the summer.
Deadly heat.
And what's interesting is that the way the bishops worked the council is that they tried to use that summer heat against their opponents, some of whom were more than 100 years old. And these 100-year-old bishops were dying in the heat in Ephesus. But they were literally dying. That's right.
They're
literally dying at the council. And they didn't care. They were going to be there, and they were going to oppose this doctrine of Nestorius, which was a dangerous thing. So the people just gathered, and they waited, and they waited, and they waited to hear what the council would say. And the beautiful thing is that when they came out to announce their decision, the people took the bishops up on their shoulders and carried them through the city in this torch-like parade, singing Marian hymns and swinging incense, you know, throughout the city. You know, so they're singing the ancient equivalent of Hail Holy Queen and Immaculate Mary as they carry the bishops through the city on their shoulders and celebrate the great decision of the Council of Ephesus. But Nestorius is one of those villains I love best, because the story is so amusing.
Well, it's such a mystery too, the whole thing. I think the key phrase that came out of there was Theotokos. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. God bearer.
And you see that. What does that describe that for us?
That is an ancient phrase, an ancient word used to describe the Blessed Virgin Mary. The earliest instance we have on a scrap of paper is from the early 200s, and it's the Subtuum Praesidium prayer, which was enormously popular, even in the 3rd century. We have examples of it in many languages. So again, this phrase theotokos is well established in Christian tradition. It's well established in Christian prayer. And all of a sudden, Nestorius is coming on the scene late in the day and saying, I want you to stop using that. And people are angry. They're saying, you're telling me not to use the prayers that my granddaddy taught me? Mm-hmm. No, they're not going to go along with that. And they're right in doing that, in going along with the tradition that goes back to the apostles of venerating the Blessed Virgin Mary.
Let me ask you this. You know, what brought me back to I never understood Mary for most of my life. What the first thing that struck me, what kind of was the cracking point, after I had happened to go to Lourdes, by the way, was the God-bearer thing. And it was particularly when you see David bringing in the Ark of the Covenant into his home, and he says, you know, this is, you know, who am I that the Ark of the Lord would come into my home? And then you see Elizabeth saying that to Mary, who is this that the mother of my Lord would come into my home? And then you see John in Revelations describing, he sees the Ark of the Covenant, and he describes a woman. That cracked everything open for me. But
yes.
I got to take us one more step here. We only have a couple minutes. In light of this book and in light of what's going on in the church today, what hope does this book, these stories point to us as far as bishops that may not be totally in order and the scandal that's going on?
Oh,
you got 3 minutes.
All the hope you'll ever need. Because no matter what happens, you know, there's precedent for it in history. There have always been villains. There have been villains inside the church. There have been villains outside the church. And, you know, the Christians have had to face this in their lifetimes. What's interesting is that the fathers of the church show us how to deal with that. Deal with it, you know, in strength. Deal with it in clarity. Be firm, but be loving. Because what's interesting is that they always try to love the villains, you know. Yeah, that's the amazing thing.
Even in the apocryphal, right later on,
they all seem to
come to a. That's beautiful.
Yeah, you know, like the story of Caiaphas. There were legends about Caiaphas. You know, the great New Testament villain. There were legends about Caiaphas coming to Christian faith at the end of his life. You find legends about Pontius Pilate coming to Christian faith at the end of his life. And you even find that about Judas, people trying to find a loophole for Judas. They don't succeed. But this is it.
In this time right now, we're in the church. We need to be faithful to the teaching of the church. We need to be able to challenge our bishops when we feel that they're out of order, but do that in a way that is respectful of their position.
Yes.
And of the tradition, the beauty of our beautiful, beautiful Catholic Church. Mike Aquilina, when is your next book coming? Well, I got to get you on, of course, before your next book comes out. But thank you so much for this book, The Villains of the Early Church. It's a great read. It's very informative. And as usual, it's kind of funny to say this, but your books are always a page turner. Even though they may be about whatever theology or whatever it is, they're always a page turner.
So, well, thank you.
Thank you so much for being my friend and being on the show again with us. Until next week, we got to sign off. Do you want to say Viva Cristo Rey with me?
Viva Cristo Rey.
Viva Cristo Rey. How about Mele Kaliki Maka? Can you say that, Mike Aquilina?
No.
I wrote a letter to someone the other day, a priest that I'm inviting to be on the show, and I signed it Bear Wozniak underneath it. I put Mele Kaliki Maka, meaning Merry Christmas. And he writes back to us, Dear Bear and Mele. So he thought it was another person's name. So... Anyway, we got to go, Mike. Thank you so much for being our guest. And go to our website, deepadventure.com, find out more about our ministry. Aloha.
You've been listening to the Bear Wozniak Adventure. Go to bearwozniak.com to get your free audio and other exciting content. Plus, you can pick up the Long Ride Home 10-episode DVD set, autographed copies of Bear's books, Long Ride Home shirts, tanks, coffee cups, and even motorcycle pins and patches. And find out how guys can sign up for Bear's Man Cave online Facebook group, all at bearwozniak.com.
Hey, man.
I don't want you to miss out on your free stuff at deepadventure.com. Go there and subscribe to our weekly email newsletter. You get free video content, including the Bear Wozniak radio show, video version on YouTube before it even airs on EWTN. And you can follow us on all of our social media. Go to deepadventure.com and subscribe. Get your free stuff. And if you're watching on YouTube, don't forget to press the subscribe button and ring that little bell. Don't miss out.